page 628, chapter 25, Modern Georgia's Changing Politics. Chapter preview, terms, one person, one vote principle, grassroots campaign. People, Richard B. Russell, James V. Carmichael, Herman Talmadge, Melvin Thompson, Marvin Griffin, Ernest Vandiver, Lester Maddox, Howard Bo Calloway, Millard Fuller, Sonny Perdue. Places, Fulton County, Eccles County, Plains, Carter Center. At the end of World War II, Georgia was still controlled by the Democratic Party. The National Democratic Party underwent major changes, becoming a party that believed in a strong national government that would regulate the economy and provide some services for citizens similar to those in the New Deal. After the war, the National Democrats also became the party that pushed for civil rights and an end to the Jim Crow system of the South. These changes made white Georgians, who still supported segregation and more power for the state government, very unhappy with the party. As early as the 1950s, some white Democrats began to vote for Republicans for the U.S. presidency. By the 1960s, some permanently left the Democratic Party and moved to the Republican Party, which supported less power for the national government. That led to the first Republicans being elected to local and state office, as well as Georgia's first Republican congressman. By the 1990s, Georgians had the first Republican senator since the Reconstruction era. By the early 21st century, Republicans controlled the Georgia legislature and many other offices in local and state government. Two other major changes to Georgia politics were the end of the disfranchisement of African Americans and the end of the county unit system. Court decisions brought about these changes. The decisions led to some of the voting shifts that have characterized modern Georgia politics and had an impact on other rights for African Americans. The growing political power of urban areas also impacted the direction and growth of Georgia's economy. Page 630, Section 1, Post-War Politics. As you read, look for the Three Governors Controversy, the end of the white-only primary in 1946, the end of the county unit system, term, one person, one vote principle. As World War II ended, Georgia politics became focused on the issues of white supremacy versus civil rights for African Americans and states' rights versus national government programs, including civil rights legislation. For most of the 1940s and 1950s, the Talmadge faction controlled state politics. In the 1960s, however, many business-oriented urban Democrats began to soften their stance on segregation and focus instead on economic growth. African Americans became part of the political process as court decisions and laws began to take down the Jim Crow system and the system of rural domination that had been held in place by the county unit system and the boundaries of voting districts. By the end of the 1960s, politics in Georgia not only included African American voters, but also an emerging Republican Party. Georgia's influence in national government. Throughout the 25-year period following World War II, Georgia had influential members in the U.S. Congress. In the House of Representatives, Carl Vinson was a powerful representative. In the Senate, Walter George served until 1957. He was followed by Herman Talmadge, who served through 1980. Georgia's other senator continued to be Richard B. Russell until his death in 1971. Vinson and Russell were particularly important men in the national government. Vinson was elected in 1914 and was considered an expert in military affairs. He had been chair of the Naval Affairs Committee for 16 years. He was a leader in building a strong Navy and Naval Air Force. Except for 2 years, 1953 to 1955, when Republicans were in control, Vinson chaired the House Armed Services Committee from 1949 until his retirement in 1965. Throughout the Cold War, Vinson supported a strong military and was one of the reasons Georgia was able to keep such a strong military presence in the state. The other man responsible for the large number of military installations in the state was Senator Richard Russell. Russell entered the U.S. Senate in 1933. In his first term, he became a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee, which recommends how money will be spent. There he served as chairman of the Subcommittee on Agriculture, which was important to Georgia's rural areas. Russell also served on the Naval Affairs Committee. In a reorganization of the committee structure in 1946, Naval and Military Affairs Committees were combined into the powerful Armed Services Committee, of which he remained a member. Russell also believed in a strong military during the Cold War. However, he opposed U.S. military intervention unless the United States had direct interest in a conflict. He advised against the U.S. involvement in Vietnam. As a leading expert on military affairs, Russell was an advisor to Cold War presidents, both Republican and Democrat. The Three Governors Controversy. At the end of World War II, Ellis Arnold, whom you studied in Chapter 23, was still Georgia's governor. He was a reformer who supported 18-year-old voting, a merit system for state workers, prison reform, and repeal of the poll tax that kept many of the poor from voting. He also sponsored the revisions to the state's 1877 Constitution that produced the Constitution of 1945. He was respected even outside the state of Georgia. In 1946, however, Arnold could not run for re-election because the Constitution barred two consecutive terms. Because he had been out of office for a term, Eugene Talmadge could run again for governor. The 1946 election was the first since the courts ended the white primary in 1944. Talmadge made that a campaign issue, saying he would bring it back. He tried to get the support of white segregationist voters by stating that blacks voting was a danger to white supremacy. Those opposed to Talmadge, including Governor Arnold, supported a Marietta native who was an executive at the Bell Bomber plant during World War II. James V. Carmichael. Carmichael represented those who wanted to promote Georgia's business growth. Even with a third candidate in the race, Carmichael won the popular vote by over 16,000 votes. However, the popular vote did not count because Georgia was still under the county unit system. By getting the votes of Georgia's rural counties, Talmadge was able to win the primary election. In November, he also won the general election, with Melvin Thompson elected as lieutenant governor. Talmadge, however, was very sick and died before he was sworn in as governor. A major controversy began when Herman Talmadge, Eugene's son, claimed and even took over the governor's office on the basis of write-in votes for him. Some of those write-ins were found after the election in Herman's home county. In spite of that seeming fraud, the General Assembly, which was controlled by Talmadge supporters, voted to recognize Herman Talmadge as the governor on January 15th and swore him in. Arnold still claimed to be governor because he did not believe Talmadge was the legal governor. For a day, Arnold worked in the inner governor's office while Talmadge worked in the reception area to the office. After Arnold left for the day, Talmadge ordered the adjutant general to change the locks on the doors, and he moved into the office. Because he was locked out of his own office, Governor Arnold set up a temporary office at the Capitol information counter on January 16th. The following day, a supporter of Talmadge had taken that area, and Arnold moved to an office building downtown. On January 18th, Melvin Thompson took the oath of lieutenant governor, and 2 days later, that of governor. With the man he believed to be the legitimate governor sworn in, Arnold officially resigned. In the meantime, Lieutenant Governor Thompson opened an office in downtown Atlanta and began legal proceedings to become governor. The government was in a state of total confusion. Secretary of State Ben Fortson refused to give the official state seal used to legalize documents to either Talmadge or Thompson. The Secretary of the Treasury froze the state's treasury. As a result, no one was in a position to run the state. The national news media had a field day reporting Georgia's political chaos. The case worked its way through the courts. Before reaching the Supreme Court, the Atlanta Journal broke the story that some of the supposed voters in Telfair County were dead or no longer lived there, meaning that those Talmadge votes had been the result of fraud. Finally, in March, the Georgia Supreme Court ruled that Thompson was the rightful head of state until a special election could be held in 1948 to fill the unexpired term of governor-elect Eugene Talmadge. Thompson had some major accomplishments during his term, including higher teacher salaries, construction of roads and bridges, and the purchase of Jekyll Island by the state. In spite of that, the Talmadge forces came back in that special election of 1948 and elected Herman Talmadge to finish out the rest of that term. Politics in the 1950s. The Three Governors controversy made headlines all over the country, much to the dismay of business leaders in Georgia's cities, especially Atlanta. They did not want the rest of the country to see Georgia politics as laughable. In Georgia, however, Talmadge's campaign, based on the defense of white supremacy, segregation, and states' rights, struck a chord with many whites. White supremacists, worried about the growing support for civil rights from President Truman and some of the National Democrats. In fact, some Southern Democrats broke off from the National Democratic Party in 1948 to form the Southern Rights Party and support its presidential candidate, Governor Strom Thurmond of South Carolina. Georgia's electoral votes did not go to Thurmond, but those of neighboring states to the east and west did. In the elections in the late 1940s, the major themes of Georgia politics continued to revolve around segregation and economic growth. The Talmadge faction of the Georgia Democrats ran campaigns that strongly defended white supremacy and states' rights, especially the state's power to determine race relations. Moderate white Democrats supported candidates who were more business-oriented and willing to be less vocal in supporting white supremacy in order to attract business investment from other parts of the country. The end of the white-only primary in 1946 led to the registration of thousands of black voters over the next few years. In 1949, African-American leaders in Atlanta founded the Atlanta Negro Voting League with the goal of registering voters. They planned to use the black vote to get support from white politicians for the needs of black citizens. The League chose which whites it would endorse in particular elections. Then, through the black-owned radio station WERD and the black Atlanta Daily World newspaper, the League asked black voters to support those white candidates who were racially moderate. Atlanta Mayor William B. Hartsfield fit into that category. When African Americans began voting, Hartsfield joined with black leaders to forge a working relationship. The Talmadge faction still controlled the governor's office and the state legislature until the 1960s. When Herman Talmadge left the governor's office in 1955, his lieutenant governor, Marvin Griffin, took his place. After Griffin's term, Talmadge supporter Ernest Vandiver became governor. Much of their effort was trying to maintain the Southern way of life, which meant segregation. As the U.S. Supreme Court began to make decisions that ended segregation and granted civil rights to African Americans, most of the state's leaders resisted those changes. However, these governors did make improvements to state education and the state's system of roads and highways. Ernest Vandiver cleaned up state government after corruption in the Griffin administration, improved the treatment of the mentally ill at the state hospital in Milledgeville, and worked to expand Georgia's trade. The end of the county unit system. The other Georgia institution defended by the leaders in power in the 1950s was the county unit system. As you learned, that system gave far more power to the voters in rural counties than to the voters in the cities. When the county unit system was first put in place, the differences between rural and urban counties was not as great. Over the years, however, the urban counties grew much more populous and the imbalance became much greater. As long as the county unit system was in place, the business-oriented moderates would remain a minority in government and had little chance of winning the governor's race. Baker versus Carr. In 1962, a major U.S. Supreme Court decision was about to change this foundation of Georgia politics. Before this decision, the Supreme Court had not become involved in how voting took place within a state, believing that it was a state political issue. In the 1962 Baker versus Carr case from Tennessee, the Supreme Court agreed to hear cases about how voting districts were apportioned, divided up, based on the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. This was an important decision that opened the door for citizens to sue in states where voting districts were set up to favor a particular group. Gray versus Sanders. The next year, Atlanta voter James Sanders sued the Democratic Party of Georgia, headed by James Gray, for using the county unit system to determine the outcome of statewide elections. He argued that it violated his 14th Amendment right to equal protection of the law. The state of Georgia argued back that it was using the system to get a balance between rural and urban areas. As you learned in Chapter 18, candidates for statewide office were chosen not by the popular vote, but by the county unit vote. Whoever won a majority of the popular vote got all of the county's unit votes. Since there were more town and rural counties, they always outvoted the urban counties. Sometimes, if there were more than two candidates running against one another, no one candidate would get more than 50%. The top two vote-getters in the state would have a runoff to choose the candidate. Whoever won got all the county unit votes. They were never split between candidates. The attorneys for Sanders used the 1960 census to illustrate the mathematics of that system. In 1960, Georgia had a population of 3,943,116 people. Of those, 556,326 lived in Fulton County. Eccles, the county with the lowest population, had 1,876 people. So one unit vote in Eccles County represented 938 people. One unit vote in Fulton County represented 92,721 people. Eccles County voters had far more power than Fulton County voters. When the case was in district court, the legislature tried to save the county unit system by passing a law making it a little more representative. But the court said that, even with those changes, the system still violated the rights of Fulton County voters. The state appealed the decision to the U.S. Supreme Court. In 1962, Georgia's Democratic Party even agreed to allow the popular vote to decide the outcome of the elections that year. By the time of the primary, the federal district court had issued an injunction against using the county unit system in the fall primary while the appeal was being decided. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that what Georgia did voluntarily in one year did not guarantee that the popular vote would determine every election. In the end, the court said, "There is no indication in the Constitution that home site affords a permissible basis for distinguishing between qualified voters within the state." In other words, a voter could not be discriminated against based on where he or she lived. The county unit system was unconstitutional. The 1963 decision in Gray versus Sanders had a major impact on Georgia politics. No longer could politicians control the state by controlling the rural areas. Urban leaders now had a better chance of electing governors who were sympathetic to the growing business interests of the state. Some politicians began to change their positions to be more appealing to urban voters. Former Governor Marvin Griffin thought trying to change the message meant caving in to desegregation, so he decided to run for governor. His main opposition was young Augusta lawyer and state senator Carl Sanders. Sanders had been one of the few legislators urging Governor Vandiver to keep schools open after the Supreme Court ordered desegregation. Sanders campaigned on the New South ideas of growth and education reform. Griffin was a rural Democrat who focused on defending segregation. Without the advantage of the county unit system, Griffin could not overcome Sanders' appeal to those who wanted to attract business and investment to the state and create a more modern image for Georgia. In this election, based on the popular vote, Sanders won a major victory. In his speech on the day he became governor, Sanders said, "This is a new Georgia." His administration led to a shift in the state's direction toward modernization. Reapportionment. Other court decisions required that Georgia reapportion, redraw, the voting districts both for the General Assembly, House and Senate, and for the U.S. House of Representatives. These voting districts had to be drawn so that each type of district had about the same number of people living in it. The state reapportionment decision was ordered in 1962. In fact, Carl Sanders got the reapportionment of the state Senate passed while he was president pro tem of that body. While Sanders was governor, the state House of Representatives was also reapportioned. Once done, the urban areas had much more representation than they had before. In a 1964 case brought by citizens in the Atlanta area, the court ordered that new boundaries be drawn for representatives serving in the U.S. House of Representatives. In all of these decisions, the U.S. Supreme Court used the one person, one vote principle. That means that the vote of each citizen should be equal to every other citizen's vote, no matter where that citizen lived. Every 10 years after the U.S. Census is taken and new population figures became known, the Georgia legislature redraws its districts for both the state legislature and the U.S. House. The Voting Rights Act of 1965 also guaranteed that this process could not be used to draw district lines in ways that would prevent African Americans or other minority groups from having any voting strength. The rise of the Republican Party. While Carl Sanders was an extremely popular and effective governor, he could not succeed himself. So the 1966 election was an open field. The person favored to win, however, was former Governor Ellis Arnold, who was a reformer like Sanders. There were many candidates in the Democratic primary, so no one candidate got a majority. Although Ellis Arnold had more votes than the other candidates, he did not have over 50% of the vote. Lester Maddox came in second in the primary, an indication that many Georgians still held on to ideas of segregation and were resistant to change. Lester Maddox had a reputation as a strong segregationist. In fact, he closed his very successful Atlanta restaurant rather than allow African Americans to eat there after the passage of the Civil Rights Act. In 1957 and 1961, Maddox had run unsuccessfully for mayor of Atlanta. In the runoff for the 1966 Democratic nomination, Maddox and his supporters campaigned tirelessly, while Arnold was so sure of victory that he did not campaign. In one of the greatest election surprises in Georgia, Maddox won the Democratic nomination. For the first time since Reconstruction, this opened the door for the Republican Party in Georgia to have a chance against the Democrats in the general election. While most Georgians continued to vote Democratic on the state level, many became increasingly upset with the direction of the National Democratic Party in the 1950s and 1960s. From President Truman's desegregation of the military in the 1950s to the support for desegregation by Presidents John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson in the 1960s, the National Party had become the party of civil rights. That caused some discontent among a number of Democrats. The Republicans were attractive to some of the business upper classes because the party supported big business and called for less regulation. They were also the party that was more conservative about taxes and spending money. Howard Beau Calloway was from a very wealthy Georgia family who made their money in textiles. He became the director of the Calloway Gardens Vacation Resort. He had been in the Talmadge faction in the 1940s and 1950s. In 1964, he switched to the Republican Party. Calloway ran that year for the U.S. House of Representatives and became the first Republican since Reconstruction to represent the state when he won that election. In 1964, the first Republicans were also elected to the state legislature. This was the beginning of a return in Georgia to a two-party system. In the 1966 election, both Calloway and Maddox were too conservative for some Georgia progressives. They urged people to write in a vote for Ellis Arnold. Congressman Calloway won the popular vote for governor. The write-in votes for Arnold, however, kept Calloway from having a majority, over 50%, of the vote. Under the Georgia Constitution, if no candidate had a majority, the election was decided by the state legislature. In spite of the popular vote, the legislature, controlled by Democrats, chose Maddox as governor. Even though the Republicans lost that election, they moved closer to being accepted in Georgia politics. In the 1968 presidential election, independent candidate George Wallace, former governor of Alabama, carried the state's electoral votes and about 43% of the state's popular vote. The second most popular choice for president was not Democratic candidate Hubert Humphrey, but Republican candidate Richard Nixon. Wallace's votes came from many of the old Talmadge faction, while the urban conservatives voted for Nixon. Humphrey, a liberal on both racial issues and social welfare issues, got the votes of Georgia's African Americans, white liberals, and some old Democrats who had not yet changed parties. Reviewing the section, 1. Define one person, one vote principle. 2. What caused the three governors controversy? 3. Why was Georgia's county unit system ended? Page 639, Georgia Portraits, Howard Beau Calloway. Howard Hollis Calloway, known as Beau, was born in LaGrange in 1927. He grew up in LaGrange and nearby Hamilton. His family sent him to Episcopal High School in Alexandria, Virginia. After graduation, he attended Georgia Tech for 1 year before becoming a cadet at the U.S. Military Academy, West Point. Calloway graduated from West Point in 1949, served in the Army in Korea, and was an instructor at Fort Benning in Columbus. His parents, Cason and Virginia, had begun reclaiming hundreds of acres of cotton land in Pine Mountain for a model farm. Later, it became a garden and natural resort. In 1952, they opened the Ida Cason Gardens, named for Cason's mother, to the public. After his military service, Beau Calloway returned home to work with what became known as Calloway Gardens. He later wrote a book called The Story of a Man and His Garden, detailing his father's work to create the thousands of acres of beauty at the resort. Politically, Calloway supported the Talmadge faction in the 1950s and 1960s. During this time, he served as a member of the Board of Regents, which oversees the university system in Georgia. In 1964, however, he switched to the Republican Party when the conservative Barry Goldwater ran for president. Goldwater won Georgia's electoral votes that year, an indication that the Republican Party was growing in the state. Callaway ran that year for the U.S. House of Representatives and became the first Republican elected to represent Georgia since Reconstruction. He served a 2-year term, voting with conservative interest during that time. In 1966, rather than running for a second term in the House, Callaway decided to run for governor. If elected, he would have been the first Republican governor since Rufus Bullock in the early 1870s. He lost, however, to Lester Maddox in an election decided in the Georgia House of Representatives. In the 1970s, he and his family moved to Colorado to develop a resort at Crested Butte. He became chair of that state's Republican Party. His hard work was rewarded by his appointment as the Secretary of the Army under Presidents Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford. In 1976, Callaway was the chair of Gerald Ford's Presidential Campaign Committee. In 1980, Callaway ran unsuccessfully as the Republican candidate for U.S. Senator from Colorado. In the 1990s, Callaway returned to Georgia. He served as chair of the Ida Cason Callaway Foundation for many years and continued to remain active in service and charitable work. In 2007, the Georgia General Assembly passed a resolution honoring his achievements in service to his state and country.